You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 362.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello to the mayor of Chickentown.
Hello, Kevin.
Filling in for Cornflake today.
Yeah, I seem to be doing that a bit more frequently.
Cornflake called in sick again. Well, yeah, we've just been wiped out by a series of plagues here in Chickentown.
Yeah, it was a tough winter, and we're beginning a tough spring.
Falling to pieces around here. Some kind of weird chicken plague, I think.
That would explain it.
But you're okay today?
I'm okay today.
I'm good today. There are two survivors in this town, and so we move on. Cornflake will be back next week. We were out with Cornflake the other night.
Yes.
We had a recent Cornflake sighting, which we will discuss when she's back here, so we can confirm. She's out there somewhere.
Yes, she's floating around.
Yes, literally, she's floating around. So we have a couple of things to get through today in Cornflake's absence.
Anyway. Sure.
A couple of things. We went out the other day without Cornflake, and this is largely Saturday Night Live themed. I saw that the show was happening. There was a live stand-up comedy show coming to the Boston area, and I saw it was announced, and I thought, trying not to go to so much junk this year.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Veterans of SNL, and
yep.
It was a stand-up show with John Lovitz and Tim Meadows and Chris Kattan.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, all right, that's cool, that's fine, but,
Yeah, I don't think it was even on my radar.
We'll pass. And then, that weekend, suddenly our buddy Ken Reed, from TV Guidance Counselor, Ken announced... guess what? I'm hosting this show.
Suddenly it became a lot more desirable.
Opening the show and hosting it. And then we thought, why not? That pushed us over the top to, like Stallone, to go see it and support Ken and go see a wacky SNL comedy show. So we did. We went to this theater, saw the show. Ken was good.
Yeah. Ken had a good opening set.
Ken was great, of course, in his hosting and opening. And I think all three of these guys, not terribly well known as stand-up comedians.
Right.
And, so we weren't expecting the most brilliant night of stand-up in history. And I don't think we got the most brilliant night of stand-up in history.
No, I think we both agreed that Tim Meadows was the strongest
Tim
of
was
the three.
Best, yeah. Yes,
which, but, going in, Lovitz is the headliner.
Right.
We kind of expected a little more from him, and we got something that was... pretty, as you said, hacky and...
Well, they bring out Chris Kattan first.
Okay, yeah.
Ken introduces Chris Kattan from that 90s era,
mm-hmm.
the mid to late 90s cast.
Yeah, I was a fan of that cast. I was a fan of Chris Kattan.
Chris Kattan was part of that was the Jim Brewer, Sherry O'Terry, Will Ferrell, Daryl Hammond, Anna Gasteyer, that crowd. I wrote it down. Chris was there from 95 through 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty long run.
Yeah, that is a very
on the show.
Long run.
But yeah... I don't know that I'd call him a great stand-up comedian.
No. I certainly liked a lot of his characters on the show, and that's kind of what he did a little bit of a... Remember when I did this character?
he kind of blazed through his SNL characters really quick and a little bit of stand-up, and then that was...
A couple of anecdotes.
Yeah, he was out there for 20 minutes, I think, just a quick sort of opening-style set. But they put on the music, the Roxbury guys' music,
mm-hmm.
and he did the little head bob thing.
Yeah.
I was never into that. I never got what was so funny about that, the night at the Roxbury guys.
I actually went to see the movie in theaters.
You saw the movie?
I had not seen the movie. My brother and I were watching SNL together at that time.
Sure.
I never thought that the sketch was the funniest, but it was just kind of dumb and goofy. And the more we heard about the movie, the more we thought, it might actually be fun. And we did actually quite enjoy it. Dan Hedaya plays their dad.
Dan Hedaya from the Tortellis?
That's right.
Okay, yeah, I like that guy. That was Carla's husband back on Cheers.
Mm-hmm. And a fellow SNL cast member Molly Shannon is in it.
Okay.
And it kind of,
I'm never going to see this
You're
movie.
Never going to see
Who
this movie.
Who are we kidding?
Let's spoil the whole thing. They do a really funny,
spoil a night at the Roxbury right now. Sorry, everybody.
There's a really funny say anything moment when one of the brothers is trying to get the other brother back.
He stands outside his window and holds up Dan Hedaya over his head.
No, he holds up the boombox playing the What Is Love song.
I should have figured that part out. Chris Kattan did a little bit of Mango
mm-hmm.
as well. and his other, what was
Mr.
that?
Mr. Peebers.
That monkey thing?
Yeah, Mr. Peebers.
Yeah, yeah. So
which that one I never got.
Those were kind of his big three characters, I guess.
Yeah, he also had that lawyer who just kind of talked in garbled Southern
accent. Oh, I don't remember the lawyer.
And then there was Gay Hitler.
So a quick little set from Chris Kattan, and then Ken brings out Tim Meadows next. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Tim was good.
Yeah, I thought he was quite good.
And Tim had a long run on SNL. He was there from 1990 through 2000. So he kind of straddled two or three casts.
He did.
And that he started in the Adam Sandler, Chris Farley era, and then was there through that weird mid-90s phase, and then through the Chris Kattan, Will Ferrell time as well.
I remember when Mike Myers came back to host after leaving the cast, and he did this whole opening song and dance number, but he runs into Tim. He's like, "Oh, Tim, thanks for coming back." And he's like, "No, I'm still here." And then he starts singing, "Well, why did I sign a 40-year contract?"
See, he might have held the record at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tim Meadows, at that like 10, 11-year run, might have been a record
and then
at that time.
Did Daryl Hammond outdo him?
Yeah, Daryl Hammond probably passed him by at some point.
And Kenan Thompson is the current.
Kenan Thompson hanging in there at year 16 or whatever he's
on.
Wow. Yeah, Kenan's far and away the longest cast member at this point.
I don't think he'll ever leave voluntarily.
So Tim Meadows had his ladies' man character.
Yeah, that was kind of his breakout character after several years on the show.
Because he didn't have a lot of big recurring characters until they finally hit on ladies' man, which was also a movie, right?
I think so, yeah. That one I did not.
You didn't even see that one.
No. Okay.
I did not either. Did he do ladies' man at the stand-up show we went to? I don't think he
did.
Really
not.
Did.
I don't think he even referred to it.
Yeah, Tim was good. And then, all right, here comes your headliner. John Lovitz comes out. And yeah, it's fun to see John Lovitz because there's John Lovitz, you know, and he looks and sounds just like himself.
I guess I expected more from him. I didn't really know what his stand-up experience was.
Yeah, that was a hacky stand-up set from John Lovitz. And
a lot of problematic kind of punching down sort of stuff.
There was some problematic, very non-PC stuff. And in fact, even that kind of stupid, what's with all the politically correct, but there was that kind of attitude to it, which was not cool. A lot of Hillary Clinton jokes.
Started off with Hillary Clinton jokes.
He was doing Hillary Clinton jokes that were kind of stale 3 years ago.
Yeah. And then a whole lot of material about Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah, a lot of problematic material that you probably should have retired like 3 years ago.
Right.
But
it probably wasn't funny in the first place.
A terrific piano player, though.
Yes, that he is.
The finale of the John Lovitz set was they had a keyboard up there, and he just kind of messes around with it a little bit, and then eventually transitions into really, really good piano playing.
Yeah.
And I remember Lovitz, I think, playing a little bit of piano on the show with Nora Dunn. It was Nora Dunn as Babette, the sex kitten, and she's like a lounge singer.
Oh, I don't think I really remember that.
At the Teeny Cafe, a little tiny nightclub. And I think Lovitz was her piano player.
All right.
So I think he might have done a little bit of actual playing on the show. But Lovitz was there from 85 through 90.
Mm-hmm.
He was part of that first, the return of Lorne Michaels cast, that weird cast when Lorne Michaels came back and filled the cast with movie actors, when Joan Cusack and Robert Downey Jr. and
Anthony Michael Hall
was there. But that season also had Lovitz and Nora Dunn and Dennis Miller.
Okay,
and
so those were the three that stuck around.
Those three carried on for the next 5-6 years or so. And Lovitz was really the breakout star of that season. That was really a flop season that's largely forgettable. But his stupid liar character, that was the hit character of that season. That was really the only recurring character that anybody remembers from that season.
I mean, I hear people saying, yeah, that's the ticket, without even, like, probably knowing where it comes from.
Yes. So, all right, so that was Lovitz anyway. And yeah, again, it's not a great set, but it's just fun to see Lovitz.
It was fun.
There he is. And we actually had a conversation on our way to the show. We started thinking, it's Saturday Night Live, and we're both long-time regular viewers of Saturday Night Live, even to this day.
Yeah, you probably started a little earlier than I did.
Yeah, because I started early 80s.
Yeah, it was really late 80s. Yeah.
I feel like I saw a little bit of the original cast, which we were crazy young to be watching the original cast.
No, that was not on my radar.
Yeah, I feel like I just barely saw a little bit of that at the time, but very little. But by the time Eddie Murphy was there, then, you know, that Eddie Murphy, Joe Piscopo, those years, I was on board. I was watching then.
Oh, that's definitely much earlier than me then.
Yeah. You came in, what, like the Dana Carvey era?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. That was a good time to start watching.
Yeah,
good cast. But we started talking anyway on the way to this stand-up show. Who have we seen in person from the cast of Saturday Night Live?
I think there's only one person that I've seen that you haven't. So
yes.
I'll go first.
Okay. I mean,
obviously, there's the three that we just mentioned.
Yes.
And I've seen Martin Short, along with Steve Martin, who was not a cast member.
Right.
Yeah, just a frequent host.
He was there all the time. But yes. Yeah, Steve Martin was never part of the cast. But yeah, we went to the Steve Martin, Martin Short live show that they've been touring with for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a pretty incredible show.
Oh, yeah. That was fantastic.
Martin Short was there for the 1 year, the final year before Lorne Michaels came back.
Mm-hmm.
He was there. That was the 84-85 season, I think. That was the Billy Crystal, Christopher Guest year. And Martin Short was the three of them. And Harry Shearer for half the season. They just let those guys take over the show for one amazing season.
Mm-hmm.
So we get Jackie Rogers Jr. and all those great Marty Short characters.
Yes. And he brought over Ed Grimley from SCTV.
Yes, Ed Grimley's there, and the synchronized swim team with Christopher Guest.
Yeah, some all-time classics.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I've seen Mark McKinney as part of Kids in the Hall.
Yes, McKinney was there like in the mid-90s for a couple of seasons. Mark McKinney from Kids in the Hall. That was right after Kids in the Hall ended. He kind of jumped over, which Lorne Michaels was producing both shows anyway. And yeah, Mark McKinney jumped over to SNL.
Never really made much of an impact.
No, and he was there for, there was a weird season, sort of like the weird mid-80s season where they loaded up the cast with a bunch of people that were known from other stuff. They tried that again in the mid-90s, and he was part of that era where they added Chris Elliott and Janine Garofalo and Colin Quinn and these people that we already knew suddenly. Mm-hmm. Michael McKean.
Yeah.
I
forgot that he was on the show, but yeah, no, I haven't seen him.
Yeah, that was, you know, 1995 or so. All right, so yeah, you saw McKinney.
I've seen Julia Sweeney.
Julia Sweeney. We saw her do her one-woman show.
Yeah.
One of her one-woman shows.
Yes.
At the Sanders Theater at Harvard.
Yeah.
That was a while ago.
That
must be 10, 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she did her show, Letting Go of God, which is like kind of her path to atheism that she tells a whole story about, and that was great.
That was fantastic.
And it was really funny and very heartfelt and moving and a terrific, terrific show. I don't know what she's up to these days.
I know she's married.
Yeah.
In fact, she married someone who just like a fan introduced her to. A fan wrote to her and said, I think you and my brother would get along, and then they got married.
That's how we met, wasn't it? A listener of the Flopcast just submitted your name. So, yeah, Julia... I remember when they added Julia to the cast, because that was when they lost Nora Dunn. So then they were down to just two women in the cast. They just had Jan Hooks and Victoria Jackson. And Victoria was practically useless anyway. So they desperately needed another woman in the cast.
Yeah.
They brought in Julia Sweeney. And yeah, she was terrific. And she was there for a few years.
And of course, Pat was her
Famous
character.
Yes.
That was a movie? I did not see it.
I have not seen the Pat movie either. I'm a big Julia Sweeney fan. I have not seen the Pat movie.
Yeah.
And I like when she pops up in Pulp Fiction also.
Yes.
I think that's just because she's buddies with Tarantino.
Yes, so.
Running the junkyard where you can drop off your murdered bodies.
Right. And then the one you reminded me of that I have seen and you have not.
Yes.
Is once again tied to our friend Ken Reed.
It's all coming back to Ken.
Laura Keitlinger.
Yeah, Laura Keitlinger, who's a stand-up comedian and writer, and she was there very briefly on the show in the mid-90s. Yeah, you were out in Los Angeles.
Yes, this is one of my trips out for Gallifrey One, and I spent a little extra time there and happened to coincide with Ken recording his album.
In which he brought a couple of his famous buddies to open for him at the recording of his album. He had Greg Proops and Laura Keitlinger.
That's right. And I was there with...
solid talent to get to open your show.
And I was there with friend of the Flopcast, Luke Ski.
You and Luke went. I'm sorry I missed that show, but I was here on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. That's the end of my SNL cast members I've seen in person.
Well, let's see who I've seen that you have not done, because I think I have 15 people on my list.
All right, so twice as many as me.
I looked at a list, and going by the most liberal interpretation possible as to who qualifies as being in the cast of SNL, either as an official repertory cast member or as a featured player, I believe the number currently stands at 151 people have been in that cast over the years. I have 15 people on my list. Mm-hmm. So I've seen about 10% of the cast in person.
Let's try to get that number up.
Yeah. So starting with Dana Carvey, I think, was the first one I ever saw live. Dana Carvey, I saw, I think, in 1987. So this was like peak Dana Carvey on SNL. This was when the church lady was just the biggest thing that everybody, we were all just freaking out as a nation over the church lady. And Dana came to do a stand-up show at Rhode Island College.
Nice.
And I think we got tickets. They were like $4 tickets or something to go see Dana Carvey. And he was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, way better than the SNL stand-up that we saw the other day.
Yeah.
Dana does a fantastic show. Yeah, he's great. Does all the characters and all the impressions and stuff, but just a fire hose of just nonstop jumps back and forth from one character to the next and just an assault of a hilarious comedy.
Yeah, I mean, he's so funny to this day when you see him on talk shows.
Yeah, that was the first guy I saw live, I think. Let me see. Oh, Nora Dunn. We keep mentioning Nora Dunn. I saw Nora Dunn do a weird thing. This wasn't a stand-up show or a comedy show or anything. This would have been in the early 90s, I think, shortly after she left the show. This was like a thing in Boston. It was like a talk. It was some kind of a speaker program or something, or a panel discussion program that they ran out of the Old South Meeting House in Boston. The building where the guys met for the Boston Tea Party.
Yeah.
This is the actual building where they assembled for the Boston Tea Party. That building is still there.
Let's, I know that. I've seen that building.
Old South Meeting House. Well, that's where I saw Nora Dunn.
Interesting.
Yeah. She was dressed up like a Native American. She had a big crate of tea with her. She cracked it open, dumped it in the harbor.
It's very experimental.
It was a panel discussion about censorship in the arts.
Oh.
And they had Nora Dunn and Roseanne Cash was there.
Oh.
And somebody else, some dude who I can't remember who it was.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I saw Nora, oddly enough.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, I would leave the house for anything back then. here's a weird one. I think most people probably don't realize that he was ever in the cast of SNL, but Paul Schaefer.
Yes.
And people remember Paul from the band. He was in the original SNL band with the original cast. And, of course, you see him in the old clips of Bill Murray when Bill Murray's doing his lounge act. You know, Paul's always there playing the keyboards with him. After that, Paul was actually in the cast.
Okay.
Not just as a musician, but very briefly, like 1979, 1980. Things got real weird around SNL, and that's as the original cast and Lorne Michaels were leaving, and what are we going to do? So all these people were kind of popping into the cast and around 1979 and into 80 and 81.
Mm-hmm.
There's a million weird people shuffled through, and they actually threw Paul in the cast for a little bit. But I've seen Paul in person a few times at Letterman, at the Letterman show. I went into New York to see the David Letterman show a few times back in the 90s, so of course I saw Paul, because there he was playing the keyboards for Dave, you know? So that counts.
Absolutely.
Adam Sandler.
You went to see Adam Sandler, huh?
I went to an Adam Sandler show, and this is when he was on SNL.
Mm-hmm.
I came to UMass Lowell to do a show for the kids, for the college kids.
Yeah.
And very, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's goofy, he's Adam Sandler, and what's he going to do? But he knew how to work that crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I liked him at the time.
Sure.
I've gotten real sick of him over the years. Kind of like Mike Myers. I don't know. Some people I've just gotten sick of.
I remember that the Red Hooded Sweatshirt song
was
very new at this point. But and he broke out the guitar at the end and did some musical stuff. And I just remember like 1,000 college kids all singing the sweatshirt song together. And next on my list from that same night was, just as a weird surprise, towards the end of his set, he suddenly said, "Oh, I brought a friend with me." And Rob Schneider came walking out. So apparently they'd driven up from New York together.
Hey.
I don't know what Rob was doing. I guess Rob had nothing to do that weekend.
Nope.
So Rob Schneider came out just to goof around with Sandler for a few minutes. He was doing the copy guy voice when he came out. He didn't really do that bit, but he just came out and went like, "Lowell," you know, because he was in Lowell.
I'm sure I would have found that hilarious.
They were very funny together. Standing on a stage where I have performed.
That was a
building where my old band Sponge Awareness Foundation, you know, we did a lot of shows at UMass Lowell. We were on that same stage.
Ooh, that's very cool. I guess.
No, it really isn't. Anthony Michael Hall.
You've seen Anthony Michael Hall?
Yeah, they have.
Oh, at a convention.
He does the convention sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know I've seen him at least once. They had him at Super Mega Fest.
Have you talked to him?
I think at the Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I ever like went up and had a conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to a Q&A that he did, and I remember speaking up at some point. Saturday Night Live even came up in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody asked him about that weird year that he had, because he was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, this is Anthony Michael Hall in 1985. He's already a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly he had this strange season where he was on Saturday Night Live. No, he's a very intense speaker.
Ah.
Like, if you talk to him, he just stares at you. And
oh, goodness.
And he's like, "Thank you for asking about that." And you're very intense as he answers everybody's questions. Chris Elliott.
Sure.
Chris Elliott, of course, from the David Letterman show, of course, back in the 80s. And then Get a Life, which I love.
I know you do.
The best show they ever made.
I don't quite get it.
Was Get a Life with Chris Elliott. And we talked about this, I think, in the early days of the Flopcast, because this must have been around 2012, I think, that Chris Elliott, he had a book out, and he came to Boston and did a talk, did a Q&A, and a book signing, and I met him that day, and he's like one of my comedy heroes. So it was very exciting to meet Chris Elliott. Yeah, but again, he was part of that weird mid-90s cast.
Yeah.
And apparently, I remember reading, I think, in one of those History of SNL books that he was really not happy at SNL.
Yeah, it wasn't the kind of format he thrived in.
Yeah, and I think he said, this is a great first job. Mm-hmm. But I think he'd been around so long, he'd made movies and TV series and stuff, and the drag of that crazy work schedule.
Yeah.
And he also felt like they weren't writing anything for him. Mm-hmm. And they were telling him, well, then write something. And he was like, what? You hired me as a performer. You didn't hire me as a writer. But he didn't really know. That's how this works, is if you want to be starring in sketches, you better work on some sketches. Whereas he was coming in like, okay, here's me. Here's Chris Elliott.
Yeah. Use me.
Yeah, write me a sketch and I will perform in said sketch. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to stay up all night writing here, which is what they expect you to do, is just put in those crazy nights up all night desperately writing sketches. Yeah.
But his kid would later be on the show, Abby Elliott.
Abby had a nice long run on the show. Yeah, Chris's daughter a few years later. Sasheer Zamata.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Remember you saw her Sasheer? Not too long ago.
And she joined the cast, I think, when suddenly there was this pressure that why is there not a black woman in the cast?
Yep.
And they brought in Sasheer Zamata, and she was really good. Mm-hmm. And she was there for a few years. A couple of years ago, she was at the Women in Comedy Festival in Boston, and I went to a sketch comedy night that she was in, or improv night, I guess. They were doing improv on stage that night, so she was part of a big group of women doing improv, and she was kind of the big name star of that night.
Very cool.
Yeah, she was great. I miss her.
Yeah, me too.
And finally, I think, bringing us up to the show that we were both at this week, but just last month, Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes, got to meet Gilbert.
Northeast Comic Con, I met Gilbert Gottfried.
He's another one you forget was on the show.
Everybody forgets that Gilbert was on SNL, because Gilbert was there in 1980.
Wow.
Like 80, 81. Same time that Eddie Murphy started and Joe Piscopo.
Amazing.
And those were the guys, they stuck around, obviously, for a few years. But there were a whole bunch of people in 1980 that they signed up. And most of them, they cut loose pretty quickly, but including a very, very young Gilbert Gottfried before anybody knew who he was. He was in the cast very briefly. So I think that's the history of us running into actual live Saturday Night Live people.
That is it.
Isn't that fascinating? Or maybe not. So that's 15 people out of 151.
You're doing pretty well.
There's a lot more to track down.
Yeah.
Load up the van. Here we go.
Load up the van with chickens.
We have to go find Ellen Cleghorn. So I did another weird thing the other night.
Oh, another weird thing.
You were out of town.
Yes, I was.
On important mayoral business, I assume.
Something like that.
This was a thing. Well, I have a book here to lead into this. It was a guy named Brian Coleman. He just put out this book. I was aware of the book. A book called Buy Me Boston. That's as in B-U-Y, buy me, comma, Boston. And he went through a bunch of old newspapers and magazines and stuff. Like, not the big mainstream newspapers, not the Boston Globe.
Right. Was the Phoenix?
The Boston Phoenix, and even more obscure stuff than that. Little arts weekly newspapers and strange little small press stuff. Just pouring through old Boston publications from the 60s through the 80s and just looking at the ads. So he's looking at, like, flyers from bands from back then and just mostly ads for bars and clubs and theaters and music kind of stuff, as well as other businesses and stuff. There's, like, hair salons and whatever. Any ads that just kind of caught his eye, that's interesting.
That's the kind of stuff that Ken Reed likes to put on T-shirts.
Oh, yeah. This is like Ken's Tea Public Store in book form, but it's just scanned from original newspapers. He just scanned a bunch of these fun old ads from decades ago.
That's cool.
Into a book.
Nice.
And yeah, it's really fun to flip through. And I've got the book here, Buy Me Boston.
It's volume one.
Volume one, because in the introduction, he says he's got tons of stuff yet to come. So hopefully there will be a sequel. But I marked a few pages here, just some things that I thought were interesting. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of ads here for The Channel. This was a big, big rock club in Boston for many years. I only went there once or twice, I think.
Yeah, I never went there.
Down by the Fort Point Channel.
Okay.
Named after the channels. Right down there by the water near the Children's Museum and South Station down that way by the water. I went there to see Mr. Bungle. but look at this ad for The Channel from 1983. And you can see there's Bad Brains, legendary punk band, and Ministry played there. The Neighborhoods was a big, big Boston band from the 80s. But look at this crazy night, July 16th, 1983, at the Channel. The Waitresses are headlining.
Yes.
The Waitresses. They know what boys like. Our Daughter's Wedding is one of the opening bands.
Never heard of them.
I know one song of theirs. They had they're like a very obscure new wave band, but they had a song called Lawn Chairs Are Everywhere. And Till Tuesday.
Yes.
Look at that. We could have seen Till Tuesday opening for the Waitresses.
Were we even old enough to get in?
If we'd been going to nightclubs in 1983, which we were not.
No.
But yikes, what a night at the Channel. This book is full of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Here's an ad for Spinal Tap for the movie from 1984 when the movie came out at the Nickelodeon.
Yes, we've been to the Nickelodeon.
The late, great Nickelodeon Theater. But it says, be one of the first 25 people to call and say, I need a Spinal Tap from Polydor Records. You would win the Spinal Tap soundtrack album and a pair of tickets to see This Is Spinal Tap at the Nickelodeon. I wish I'd gotten in on that.
That's very cool.
Yes. This is just a little tiny ad. Look at this two-page spread. On one side, it's Fritz the Cat.
Yes.
X-rated cartoon movie Fritz the Cat. On the other side, there's a Filene's ad from 1963 saying that Filene's is going to be closed because of the death of President Kennedy.
Oh.
Look at that. But then the weirdest ad of all in this two-page spread, little tiny, like classified ad almost, from 1967. And it says, are you an exceptional gal? Listen to this. We are seeking a bright, attractive young woman who has all the secretarial skills and the willingness to earn over $10,000 a year. She must be free to travel, work long and irregular hours, and have the ability to meet and persuade the general public. What in the world is that about?
I don't know.
I want to apply for the exceptional gal position just to see what it is. I hope the ad is still valid. It's an ad for Spit. I've heard of this club. This was a punk club
called
Spit. And it says, dress punk. You're supposed to dress up like a punk if you want to go to Spit.
Music by WBCN's Oedipus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Oedipus was the program director at the big Boston rock station for decades. Spinning all the punk hits, evidently, at Spit. I think Spit is the space that became Axis after that.
That was right next to the Avalon, and all that is now a House of Blues.
Lansdowne Street in Boston, right across from Fenway Park, is a history of a series of various nightclubs and bars and stuff. But yes, Spit.
Interesting.
It was an actual punk club. Ad for TT the Bears, which was a legendary Boston rock club and just closed a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I like this ad, though, from 1988 because the Blake Babies are playing there.
Yay!
Juliana Hatfield's band from when she was a teenager. Very cool. Here's an ad for a gay club.
You know what? I've heard of that club.
Yeah. There's some good like gay stuff and drag shows. And look at this ad, though, over here. Ramones and Talking Heads playing together.
Neat.
At the Orpheum.
Yeah, that's Orpheum's still around.
Still there. We still go to shows at the Orpheum. All tickets, $4.50.
Ugh.
1977. You can go to a little theater and see Ramones and Talking Heads together. Yikes, I wish I'd been there. It's a couple of ads for The Paradise, another club which is still exists today.
Yep.
One of the last
rock clubs.
One of the last real historic rock clubs still standing today is The Paradise. We were just there for Letters to Cleo a few months ago. Here's a Paradise ad from 1978, The Cars.
Nice.
Doing a long run of shows there. Ramones, again. There's the Ramones with The Real Kids opening. That's a Boston punk band, very fondly remembered. The Real Kids. Laura Nero is there. Southside Johnny. Martin Mull.
Whoa.
Performing there in 78. Then there's another ad under it, another Paradise ad from 1981. And this is, look at this, just like within a couple of weeks in 1981, Joan Jett is there. Bow Wow Wow.
Oh.
Gary U.S. Bonds, Leon Redbone, Juice Newton.
Oh, if only we could travel back in time.
Here's David Bowie at the Cape Cod Coliseum. Look at Bowie in 1974.
Yeah.
Tickets, the good tickets were $7.50. What in the world is Bowie wearing in this photo?
It's a striped jumpsuit.
Striped pajamas of some sort.
Pretty cute.
Here's some kind of a club called Oliver's, which I do not remember. They must have been long gone. But look at this. This is Oliver's, 1973, performing for an entire week, every night, Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, wow.
And look at that. The following week, Graham Parsons. The week after that, Tim Buckley. What's going on at Oliver's?
Yeah, you never see people performing for a whole week.
They booked Springsteen for a week.
Okay.
Here's a Green Street Station. I vaguely remember this being a club that existed. Okay. Green Street Station, 1986.
It's a station on the Orange Line.
Yeah, this is the Jamaica Plain neighborhood. The Pixies are there. Treat Her Right
Yeah.
Remember Treater, right?
You've told me about them, but I do not
recall. That's Mark Sandman, who went on to form Morphine.
Okay, so that was before that.
His pre-Morphine band was Treater, right? I saw Treater, right, once. Nice. I saw them opening for Boston. Mm-hmm. Like the actual Boston.
Wow. Yeah.
At the Boston Garden. This guy named Ray Mason on this lineup as well from 86. And Ray Mason was one of those old rock guys that was around forever back then. And he left me a crazy answering machine message once.
How did that happen? Were you trying to book him for...
Yeah, when I was booking acts for the Grind, the old Grind coffee house. And yeah, Ray Mason contacted me. He gave me a CD and wanted me to book him there. And I was trying to tell him. I vaguely knew who he was. And I was like, you know, it's a little coffee shop in a little suburban town. And I don't know what kind of crowd you're going to draw there. And he was like, oh, you know, maybe. And then he left me a message after that, this long message. Hey, yeah, I want to, you know, let's book a show. And that's it. He left me this long, funny message, which he ended, I remember, by saying, Ray Mason out. I never booked him, though, because I think the whole place shut down not long after that.
Yeah.
But it was funny seeing that name in this book, though. Look at this ad for Narcissus. Remember Narcissus?
I do remember Narcissus.
Narcissus was in Kenmore Square, sort of around the corner from Fenway Park.
I think I went there once.
You went to Narcissus?
Yeah.
I never went inside. From the outside, though, I remember the entrance, the doorway, had like this big, weird silver overhanging thing. It was all silver on
the inside. Vaguely remember that, yeah.
Was this like the Boston equivalent of Studio 54? That's what reminded me of.
I don't know. I mean, not by the time I went there. We went there on a New Year's Eve once.
It looked like more of a flashy, glittery, disco-y sort of a dance club, from the outside, at least.
I think that's what it was originally.
I never went inside. Anyway, this goes on and on. You could flip through this book all day. It's astonishing. Did you know there was a beauty contest back in the 70s for African-American women in Boston?
No, I did not.
Called the Miss Black Fox Competition. There's a couple of ads for it in here.
Wow.
And this page actually shows all the contestants from 1973. Look at these lovely ladies, all trying to be Miss Black Fox. It was the 70s.
Yes, it was. You can tell by the hairstyles.
Yikes. So that's Buy Me Boston. Anyway, that's the book. But the reason I was out the other night was this guy, he put together a show called Buy Me Boston Video Loft.
Nice.
Which I think was a tip of the hat to the old Movie Loft.
Yes.
Movie show on one of Boston's old UHF stations. So I wasn't quite sure what they were going to be showing at this thing, but there I go anyway. I put on my Robillard from Mars t-shirt.
Oh, did anyone recognize him?
Nobody made a comment. Not that I was parading around screaming, look at my Robillard shirt, everybody. But I was hoping they'd show Robillard from Mars.
Yeah.
They did not. They didn't really show like short little commercials PSA kind of stuff. Hopefully next time. Maybe we can make a request. He's planning to make this a regular thing, like every 3 months or so, he said. He's hoping to do a video night like this.
That's really cool.
So he showed some music videos, like locally produced, local band kind of music videos, three or four of them.
Any that you really remember?
No, I'd never heard of these acts before, really. But there was a woman named Mayanna, who's a saxophone player. So it's like an instrumental song, and it's this woman with a saxophone. And it was a video largely shot at like a carnival or an amusement park. Uh-huh. So she's riding on a Ferris wheel, playing a saxophone, and she's going down one of those giant slides with the saxophone.
Okay.
Which seems very, very dangerous.
Yeah,
break your teeth doing that,
you
know?
Or choke on it.
But there's Mayanna, a band called Planet Patrol, did a very funny music video. And then a band called Johnson Crew, which I had never heard of, but that's Johnson, but it's spelled J-O-N-Z-U-N.
Okay.
And one member of the Johnson Crew was Maurice Starr. And I remember that name. That's the guy that created New Edition.
Oh.
And the New Kids on the Block.
Oh, yeah.
This was the guy that was putting those boy bands together around Boston back in the 80s.
He was actually in that band?
Yeah. He was a performer and singer. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of solo work and work in bands and groups like Johnson Crew
back then.
And yeah, of course, he made his real fame and fortune as a producer and a assembler of boy bands a couple of years after that. But this crazy video by Johnson Crew, and they're all dressed up like, they look like they were dressed to be in the court of Ming the Merciless. Just those
awesome,
big, insane, science fiction looking kind of costumes. And the voice in it is all like robotified.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, like they put on those robot voices, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they were processing the voice through synthesizers and stuff. And so it's just this robot voice screaming, "We are the Johnson Crew."
I wonder if this is on YouTube.
I hope it's on YouTube. It's quite good.
Nice. That sounds like the highlight.
Yes, with Maurice Starr. It was quite good. He showed some clips from a kid's show, like a Boston-produced kid's show from the early 70s. This is one of those things like with a live local host, like a Bozo the Clown kind of format.
So, yeah.
You have a studio audience, bleachers full of very young children.
Yeah.
And this guy, but he wasn't a clown or anything. He was just a guy, like this boring dude is the host of the show.
It was called
Major Mudd.
Okay.
M-U-D-D. Major Mudd had a kid show. I have no memory of this at all. This is from the early 70s. They do a segment called Let's Talk on Major Mudd, in which he would interview a couple of the kids from the audience. And these were young kids. Like, there's a clip, and he's interviewing these two little girls. I don't know, I cannot tell how old kids are, but
I'm guessing. Could they speak in complete sentences?
Yeah, but they were like, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, maybe young kids like that. And the whole audience, like, you can't even control them. Like, kids were getting up and wandering around. And this little girl, like, just got up and stood next to where the interview was happening, and they kind of told her to go sit down.
Yeah.
And she just stood there. But he's talking to these two little girls. I think they were sisters. Vicious Boston accents.
Oh, that's awesome.
I've never heard a kid that young with a Boston accent that thick.
That's hilarious.
It was astonishing. And then he was like, and you're going to sing a song for us? And these two little girls sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Hey, I did that when I was in kindergarten.
You sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow in kindergarten?
Yeah.
Like a big show?
In a talent show.
Wow.
I dressed up as Dorothy, too.
Oh, man. You should have been on TV. I'll bet you were better than these girls, because they were horrible. Now it's the little girls with the Boston accent.
Yeah.
Just screeching their way through somewhere. It sounded so dreadful. It was so funny. And the audience, those of us in the theater watching this, like, 40-something-year-old video, break into applause at the end of the song. And I just thought, how amazing is this? Like, if I wish these girls could know.
Yes.
All these years later, there's a theater full of people watching this and applauding. We have to find them.
Yes.
They're out there somewhere. That's the Major Mudd Show. There were a couple of actual guests at this event who were in these videos.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. He brought this,
brought this guy
up on stage who was part of the punk scene in Boston back in the early 80s. And this guy's actually a director. He made a documentary called All Ages XXX, Where Boston Hardcore Began.
Neat.
So kind of capturing, documenting the old Boston hardcore punk scene. But there was a local daytime Phil Donahue kind of talk show back then in the early 80s. I have no memory of this at all. There was a show called Weekday. This guy that was talking was a punk kid around Boston.
Yeah.
And him and all his punk friends found out that they were doing a punk rock themed episode of this talk show. So they all went
to be in the audience. Nice.
And they're standing up and talking, you know, it's the guy doing Donahue, you know, like there's like this local dude who thinks he's Phil Donahue, you know, so he's interviewing all these punk kids out of the audience. They've got these punk people on stage. And then they brought out a guy who was marketing a line of punk fashion. And then models come out, they put on music, and these girls come out like it's a fashion show all of a sudden. And it's not really punk.
Right.
And also, you have real punk kids in the audience.
Yeah.
Just aghast. They're just laughing and confused. These girls come wandering out. They're sort of dressed for a Pat Benatar video.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of awkwardly standing there dancing. It was bizarre. So next they introduced, they're going to show something that was produced out of high school called The Civil Rights Rap. And I was delighted when this was announced because I thought, here we go. This is going to be horrifying. I cannot wait to see something produced out of high school in Boston in the 80s called The Civil Rights Rap. Hang on. This is going to be a train wreck. Well, this came out in 87, I think, 87, 88.
Mm-hmm.
It was made at Lincoln Sudbury High School.
Okay.
The home of They Might Be Giants, by the way. I think those guys went to Louis. They were long gone by then,
right.
Of course. They were adults in New York by 87, 88.
Sure, they
were. Yeah. They were not part of the civil rights rap. But it was really good.
Oh, no, really?
This is actually a very, very well-produced rap video about civil rights. I mean, for its time.
Yeah.
You know. But it was sort of a Run DMC style.
Sure.
In both in sound and in video. And yeah, they did a nice job. I had to
give a tip of the hat.
Yeah.
To the,
I was like,
civil
you know, I judged it in advance wrongly. Civil rights rapping. And I have no idea what, if any of this stuff is on YouTube. I don't know if you can watch civil rights rap. I hope so. The finale of this Buy Me Boston Video Loft night was produced in the early 80s by something called Massachusetts Rock Against Racism.
Mm.
So a lot of racial themed stuff they showed that night, actually. This was the other clip that they had an actual guy who was in it came out. This dude named Reby Garofalo comes out, and he was one of the people involved in producing this show. This was a show that was produced for cable access, like an access show in the Boston area. And as far as I know, they might have only just made this one episode of it. But they got some kind of a budget. They got some kind of sponsorship for it because it was supposed to be like a rock against racism thing. So they put some money into it. And it was essentially a anti-racism themed Boston knockoff of American Bandstand.
Okay.
Where they would play songs and you had a bunch of people dancing. The show was hosted by Tanya Hart, who I remembered. I'd forgotten all about her, but she was like a local TV personality. She'd be around on TV news shows and stuff. Like, I don't know if she was an entertainment reporter or a talk show host, but she was around on local TV back then. And she was very good. She was the host. The name of the show was But Can You Dance to It? And the premise was they would bring in local DJs. And again, I think they only made this one episode, but they had three guest DJs on the show who each brought a song with them. They'd play the song and all the kids would dance and then they would discuss the song.
Oh,
but here's what they had. And again, for the racial, for the you know, diversity aspect, they had a guy named Jose. I forgot his last name, but Jose somebody was there and he had sort of a modern salsa themed kind of a song that, that he brought. I did not know this DJ. The other DJs, though, I totally knew because they had Charles Laquadera is on the show. Charles Laquadera was the morning DJ on WBCN, Boston's big rock radio station for decades.
Yes.
The Big Mattress, his morning rock show. There's Charles Laquadera. The song that he picked for the show was Adamant Goody Two Shoes.
I like that song.
And I think this was 1982, I think, when he made this thing. So you watch this room of about 20 or so people, just all these early 80s Boston people. They weren't really kids. They looked like people in their 20s, I think. Just all these dudes with little mustaches, you know, wearing skinny ties and whatnot, you know, and girls. And they're all just dancing around to Goody Two Shoes.
That is a very danceable song. Yeah. I vote for that one.
Off in the corner, there's Tanya Hart and Charles Laquadera dancing. Then they interview Laquadera after the song. Then they bring out your third and final DJ, Sonny Joe White. And Sonny Joe White, people remember from Kiss 108, which was the big Boston pop station, top 40 station, and also V66.
Yeah.
A couple of years after this, Boston's music video channel, V66, he was one of the VJs. And he was kind of just like the king of Boston late night of the scene back then.
Yeah.
He would just be out on the scene and popping up everywhere and radio and TV, and everybody knew Sonny Joe White. But there's Sonny Joe. And his song was Pointer Sisters, I'm So Excited.
Okay.
And again, we watch all the kids dance.
I wish they made more of these.
I was just watching Eddie and the Cruisers 2, Eddie Lives, the other night.
Oh.
That's what kind of time I have, you know, in between flopcasts.
And when I'm out of town, you know, anything goes.
You were out of town. What am I going to do? But they have some people playing themselves. It was like in the media, you know, like reporting on Eddie and the Cruisers, that kind of thing. So Martha Quinn pops up in it and Larry King is in it. And Sonny Joe White. I forgot. Oh. Sonny Joe White pops up as a radio DJ in Eddie and the Cruisers 2.
What a coincidence.
Eddie Lives.
You didn't see him twice in the same week.
What a freaky coincidence. But yeah, that was this bizarre show. And then there's the dude that was there in person at the theater the other night, Rebe Garofalo, who was one of the producers. At the end of the show, they cut to a clip of this guy, of Rebe, reporting from a Strawberries record store. And he's just kind of walking around talking about all the different kinds of music and how it's bringing everyone together from all different backgrounds and whatnot, you know, kind of not subtly driving the point home of the rock against racism. But he's just in a Strawberries in 1982. So there's just records hanging on the wall behind him. It's like Men at Work, Business as Usual, Missing Persons, I think, and you know, Billy Joel, The Nylon Curtain. I saw all these records behind him. It was wonderful.
So that in itself is a nice blast from the past.
Oh, yeah. So really an incredible night of bizarre old Boston videos.
Well, I'm glad you discovered that.
And again, it's probably not as fascinating
to anyone else
outside the Boston area.
Right.
So I hope people can relate to this kind of thing in other areas far beyond Chickentown and Boston. But that's what I was up to this week.
Sounds like fun.
Because we like weird old videos.
Absolutely.
So yeah, man, we should try to go back maybe next time they do a Boston Video Loft.
I would definitely like to see that.
Let's all meet up and see more old weird videos. A couple of plugs before we wrap up. And that is, I was on Earth Station 1.
Yes,
you know,
you were.
Here on the ESO Network, this past week, I was on Earth Station 1 to discuss Shazam.
The new Shazam movie.
The new Shazam movie, which we saw and we enjoyed.
Yes, we did.
What fun. We are longtime Shazam Captain Marvel fans going back to the old TV show in the 70s. So they had me. I was thrilled to be on Earth Station 1 to discuss with Mike and also Ashley. Mm-hmm. They're a resident movie guest. They always have Ashley on to talk movies with them.
Yeah.
Whenever they have a movie to discuss, which is practically every week these days.
Yeah,
there's
I know.
Just a new comic book movie comes out every other week. So Ashley was there. And also Dav, who's a guy I do not know, but he was cool too.
Yeah.
So that was a fun talk. Check out the Shazam episode of Earth Station 1. And speaking of Shazam episodes, also check out the Shazam episode of Earth Station DCU, which I think as this show comes out, it is not available yet. I haven't even recorded it yet, but I'm going to be on Earth Station DCU also to discuss the new Shazam movie. So that should be out in the next few days.
Yep. And we'll put it in the guest spots area of our website.
Lots of opportunities to hear me talking about Shazam.
Yes.
I'm just wandering through the network.
Yelling about Shazam.
Trying all the doors.
Yelling Shazam.
Seeing where I can get in to burst in and discuss Shazam. Yes. And the other plug is God's Comics.
God's Comics.
Speaking of Men at Work, we just mentioned Men at Work.
Yes, we did.
A few minutes ago. And my old cover band, God's Comics, we perform every 10 years. This will be our third ever show. And God's Comics.
I was at the second one.
You were at the second one. You were not at the 1999 show.
No, that was just before we met.
I hope everyone can join us at the 2019 show. And this will be Saturday, May 25th at the Hearing Room in Lowell, Massachusetts. And what we do in God's Comics is we do Elvis Costello songs, we do Men at Work songs. And I think it's been officially announced now we're adding the Monkees.
Really?
To the lineup as well. So I think we're doing some Monkees songs as well.
That's an even weirder combination.
Every 10 years we're going to add another artist.
Oh. Good idea.
I think in 2029 we're going to add the Johnson Crew. We're going to do some old Maurice Starr Johnson Crew classics. Join us for God's Comics. And, man, that's enough of this. Get us out of here, if you can. Cornflake style.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/flopcast. We are on Twitter at flopcast, Instagram, @_flopcast, and, of course, flopcast.net is our website where you can find all of our show notes.
Yes, yes, yes. All right. Well, Mayor, thanks for filling in for an ailing Cornflake. And I think she's on the mend.
Yes. I was just going to say, it's not a pleasure when Cornflake is sick, but it is always a pleasure to be part of the Flopcast.
Of course, we miss Cornflake. She'll be back next week. We already have stuff lined up that we've been waiting to discuss with Cornflake. We'll do that next time. See you then.
Bye.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmos Show and the PCC Multiverse.
That is by far my favorite because it's all so character driven and the stakes are high and there's much more of a mystery and intrigue to it.
A game like Wolfenstein, which people are saying are one of the most socially important video games of the past 10 years.
Catch our shows on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on over 30 more podcast outlets, including our friends right here at the ESO Network.
All right, it's the secret after show.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else in that book that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, Cornflake usually brings something to the secret after show.
Oh, I was not prepared. I'm sorry.
But we have this book with like almost 300 pages of weird old stuff in it from Boston from decades past. So let me flip through this and see what else is in here that might be worth discussing. See if anything catches your eye as I flip through it that looks weird to you.
Female Jell-O wrestling.
Oh, you know what? Good call. Let's flip back. I can't believe I just flipped past female Jell-O wrestling. Let's see. Tuesday, Beyond Mud Wrestling, female Jell-O wrestling. Any girl is eligible.
$50 for the winner.
Don't worry, ladies. There's no screening process to wrestle in Jell-O for the amusement of pervs. Come on in. Yeah, $50 for the winner of each match, $25 for the loser of each match.
That seems like a lot of money, especially since...
That's good money. What year is this? 1981.
Yeah. Domestic bottled beer is only 75 cents and a dollar for bar drinks.
Yeah.
How do they raise the money for the wrestlers?
That's an excellent point. I wonder if there's a cover charge.
It doesn't say. It
doesn't say anything about a cover. Maybe there's a cover to watch ladies wriggling around in Jell-O.
And this is all happening at the Ark on Beacon Street.
Ark on Beacon Street in Boston. Wow.
Never heard of that.
I don't think the Ark is there anymore.
I doubt it.
You'd think with this kind of business model, they'd be unstoppable. Are there any businesses in Boston that still offer female Jell-O wrestling? I kind of hope not.
I hope not, too.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.